morning, everyone. Ron was unable to make the meeting today, so he's asked me to chair. And I think all of you know that I'm Marie Reagan. I'd like to call to order this meeting. And our first order of business is to mention that the audio was perfect at the last meeting because everyone hewed to the suggestion Michaela made about putting your cell phones away. So we thank you for that and hope that you'll continue. You all received the minutes of September 8th, 2015. Were there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, could I have the motion to accept as presented? Joe?
Second.
Dr. Burke, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. You received also a copy of the EMS proposal. The proposal has additional information. It was sent to everyone by email. Courtney Bush will present for the group what it encompasses and will try to answer any questions that the council may have. Courtney, you want to take it away?
Sure. First of all, thank you, everyone, for humoring me this morning. I know I sent you a lot of information. I spoke a couple of weeks ago with Tom on the phone, and we were talking a little bit about the proposal and, you know, get some questions for people who wasn't able to be here today. And as he and I were talking, I realized a lot of the questions he had were actually addressed through the standard operating guidelines, which was that 70-page document I asked Michaela to send out to you. So when I talked to him, I said, listen, I think I'll just send you that. He said, maybe you should send it to everybody. And he said, you can just tell him that Tom's being the jerk here who wanted to hear it. And I said, oh, I won't tell him that, but I told him your thing. So I figured I'd share it with you. I know that it's probably way more information than anybody ever wanted to know about this program, but in case you were so inclined, there's a lot of info there. I have a brief PowerPoint presentation just to go over the major points of our goal with the EMS program, and then I will take any questions if you can ask questions throughout this as well. So, student rep campus medical emergency service. Well, let's see if I can run a computer today. Okay, so this is the mission statement, which you probably saw both in the proposal and the standard operating guideline, to provide quality professional care with compassion and understanding while cultivating an environment for leadership development, applied learning, and community service are a core value. So, we figured this tied in pretty significantly both to our campus mission and the SUNY Excel's goals as well. So applied learning, this is a hands-on application that a lot of our students will be able to use from their majors. Creating a robust, active, and enriching student life is directly from SUNY Excel. This is something they expect us to be doing here on our campus, and this is another way that I think we can help create that. And lifelong learning, these are students, as I'll talk about a few slides down, who will continue to be involved in their community in the EMS programs in their local areas. It creates a positive impact. We have Canton Rescue Squad, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with in the area. It's a volunteer squad. It's a decent size, but it certainly continues to look for members, and this is another way to help supplement what they do in the village. And we saw some direct correlations too to our academic programs like nursing, criminal justice and criminal investigation, emergency management. These are natural fits for a lot of the students in these programs. And, which I might mention here or I might not, students are asking us about this. So this kind of came about organically from students expressing interest, and we had some staff folks who were willing to help us write a proposal. So the link there, which I'm not going to click, but basically goes to our emergency management website. And we're actually the training center for St. Lawrence County for all EMTs, for people for recertification and for new courses. So this really couldn't be a better place to have an EMT. Okay, so this is the committee, in case you wondered who was on it. We've got a little bit of everybody. I chair the committee. RJ is the person who wrote the proposal. He's a local EMT, and he also works here at our help desk. Al Monka is our chief of police. We've got our director of residence life, director of student activities, director of health services. We have an LPN who's also a local EMT, our athletic trainer, and our director of counseling. So we've got kind of a varied group here. We've also consulted with SUNY Legal, which I'll talk about in a minute. We've spoken with Sean. We've spoken with Executive Cabinet, Canton Rescue, Canton Fire Department, and some students who are EMTs. So we've gotten a wide swath of information from the folks around the campus. This group has been meeting, the group with the bullet points has been meeting regularly for about a year and a half now. So we really, when you see all the detail that goes with these standard operating guidelines, those proposals, it's because of the team who really vetted this information. So the approval process, I think one of the most significant questions I got asked early on from members of the council was, you know, is this okay? Assuming legal taking a look at this, and they have. They've seen everything. They continue to see everything as we do it. They reviewed all the original documents in February of this year, and they approved it. They had no concern. In fact, this is something, as I'll show you later, this is something most SUNY schools are doing already, so it's not really a huge leap. And we actually had an EMS program on our campus several years ago. Patty Todd, who's our director of health services, tells me in her early years working here, and I think she's been here 30-something years, we actually had a squad, and it's just over time, things evolved, and there wasn't the interest in something like that. Executive Cabinet reviewed it on May 11th and suggested that it come forward to College Council. So next steps, College Council approval, Student Government Association is our next step. The New York State Department of Health, there's a whole application process that we have to go through. And then our goal would be to start for fall 2016 if we met all those steps and we had the support and we had the money and all those sort of things that come with it. Okay, so I just thought some interesting historical data in case any of you wondered how often we actually have medical emergencies on campus. These are, like, fall 2014, we had 60 calls. For 36 of them, Can't Rescue came onto the campus. They either came and transported people out or they came, assessed, and left. And we had 27 medical emergencies where Can't and Rescue didn't have to come at all. And I wrote at the bottom, that means a few things. Either their friends took them to the hospital, they told university police they didn't want medical care, they visited the health center, they visited the after-hours clinic. So this semester, that's only through October 20th, I haven't had time to update the data yet. We've had 35 calls, 27 where we had Can't Rescue here on campus, and 8 where we had. So it's something that happens regularly. It's not an extreme problem. It's, you know, 50-ish is a pretty average number per semester, but it's enough that we can keep some people busy. So questions on any of that data before I go on to the next one? So logistics. We'll have about 2 to 4 students who be on call at a given time. The fast response time, I think, is one of the biggest pieces of this EMS squad. Can't Rescue's response time on a good day, because of the fact that it's a volunteer squad that's downtown, is 15 to 20 minutes. That's a decent response time. We're perfectly happy with everything Can't Rescue is doing. Nationally, the response time for student EMS groups is between 2 and 4 minutes. So when you're talking about a critical incident where somebody lost, where somebody's having a heart attack or something like that, we have the opportunity to have students here a heck of a lot faster than we do Can't Rescue. And I think I'll stress this further down. The student EMTs are likely who are already serving on other EMT squads. They're already full-fledged EMTs. So we're not talking about random students who just want to be, you know, medical professionals someday. These are people who are already trained. So we'll have people right on scene, which is a really big perk. Our current plan is jump bags strategically located around the campus. You read the SOGs. You probably saw a little bit about that. Since then, we've also spoken. I talked to Tom. He mentioned I'd like to see more jump bags in more places than we have them. And I said, easily done. It's not, you know, the expense of a few more jump bags isn't any different than what we're doing now. We've talked as a committee about potentially doing backpacks that the EMTs will already have that they'll be able to sign out and have in their rooms when they're on call, instead of going to a jump location. So they might have like a hiking backpack sort of thing with all of the stuff in it that they need. So that might even cut down response time if we go that route. So just so you know, we're constantly evolving and talking about new ideas. So when Can't Rescue shows up, the patient care is transferred to Can't Rescue at that point. The student EMTs will still be here and still be helping, but Can't Rescue usually takes over at that point, especially if they're being transported. Home base is university police for all the records. There's going to be a lot of paperwork and things that the EMTs need to do, and university police have agreed to house that. So just a quick visual for the steps. The emergency call comes in at UP. University police dispatches the student EMTs. We're talking about walkie-talkies at this point. A university police officer will also go to the scene, and then the student EMT will assess and remediate the situation until Can't Rescue is able to arrive. And sometimes Can't Rescue may not need to come at all. It may be something that the student EMTs can handle, and we don't need Can't Rescue, which is kind of the other big info that didn't fit on any other screen didn't make sense anywhere else, so I put it on this one. They will not, the student entities will not be doing anything with mental health situations, with the exception of if there's life-threatening injuries that have happened that they need to assess. So they're not going to be dealing with, we deal with a lot of mental health transports for students who have suicidal ideation, that sort of thing. This is not something the student entities are going to be dealing with. They're also mandated reporters under Title IX and the Violence Against Women Act, so if they have a situation reported them about a sexual assault or a domestic violence situation, they're required to report that to university police or our Title IX coordinator. It was something we were really worried about. We reached out to SUNY Legal and I said, yes, this. For non-transferring emergencies, the EMTs can evaluate or care without camp rescue having to come if they don't need to. There's also a great opportunity for these students to serve the community in other ways, like helping out at athletic events, hosting trainings, and teaching CPR classes. So this is another resume builder for them slash service for us. We actually hire right now EMTs to be on scene at different sort of sporting events and things we have on campus. We'd be able to use our own squad for that, which would be great. And next week we have the Green Dot Bystander Intervention Training, and two of us from the committee are going to be there to get trained in the Train the Trainer program, and we're going to make sure that all these students are trained in bystander intervention as well. And this is about sexual assault and domestic violence primarily. So we'll have a group, a core group of students also trained in that, which is great. And like I said, most of our EMTs will already serve on other local squads, so these will be people who have that experience. So budget, everybody's favorite question. This is, because this is the one of the first steps we've taken, this is really a proposal at this point. We haven't gone through the steps of having a budget because we don't know whether this is going to even get approved here or anywhere else. The only comparison figure I have right now is SUNY Potsdam. SUNY Potsdam budgets $11,960 this current year. The state pays only the insurance, which bears $6,000. They have the Cadillac of insurance for some reason. Our insurance was quoted by the exact same company at $4,000 on the high end. She actually thinks we're going to be more like $3,000, but we're being conservative at budgeting at $4,000. In fact, she said she has absolutely no idea why Potsdam is paying this much for insurance. So we will spend less than Potsdam. So it's a good goal. The student government pays for the remainder of that, so we will certainly be trying to tap the student government for some the startup cost of Oakland is about $14,000 and change, an annual cost of about $6,500 with $4,000-ish on the high end being insurance. The budget details are outlined in the proposal so you can see all the specifics. Most of the annual costs are replacing the throwaway supplies, you know, they're using the medications that have to get replaced. And funding plan is hopefully a combination of some money from the student government and the state if we're able to move forward with it.
Courtney, could I ask you a question?
Sure.
I'm absolutely pleased, but a little astonished at the low cost of that insurance. Obviously, it looks comparable to Potsdam's, but is it a standalone policy? Is it part of the overall policy that the college has? Is all kinds of liability covered?
It's a standalone policy that covers this EMS squad. This is, binder info here, which I can look through when we're done and I can find the answer to that for you. But the company is an insurance company who insures a lot of the other SUNY EMS programs, and she was actually, like I said, initially she was like $2,500 to $3,000. She said $4,000 would be the most expensive thing that we could come up with for you, and still has no idea why Potsdam's is $6,000. So I don't know, but it's liability insurance and it's for just the EMS squad. It's not tied to our can. I don't know what we.
Okay, so in other, anyone that's being transported isn't covered, just the EMS student that's transporting?
I believe it just covers the squad. I don't know that it would cover individual students like that. I can find the answer to that before it
goes. I hate to believe her.
Right?
Our students can't transport. We won't
no,
be having any other
they would just be transporting like from the room to.
Right. They might, they will probably not be moving them anywhere.
Okay.
They will be sitting with them where they are waiting for camp rescue. If
okay.
It's something where we think they need to be transported. In fact, this came up at our last.
So that issue doesn't, you don't have to worry about that.
No, I don't. I mean, unless there was an emergency where the building was on fire and we had to move them, something like that, but a general situation, we're going to treat them where they are. Another thing that came up at our last committee meeting, which is in the budget, but we apparently don't need to purchase, and I'm so still looking into this. Apparently, backboards are no longer the thing that EMS squads use. Apparently, they cause more injury than not. And so there's even been a discussion about whether those are something that we can need to purchase because it's being recommended to the national EMS groups and they don't utilize them anymore. So we might save a tiny fraction of, you know, this overall cost if we don't have to purchase backboards. But that's a good question. And I'll get more details on that and I'll share that with the council as well. Other questions on this piece? So here's some other institutions that already have these programs. I went short on the other list just to give you a couple of examples. There are plenty of them. If you go to the National College of Emergency Medical, or the National Colleges of Emergency Medical Services, they actually provide a list of every single school in the state of New York. There's a New York page that has one. These are some of the examples of private colleges. These are some of the examples of the SUNY colleges. As you can see, it's a pretty robust program, and all of the area colleges except us have one. So we are currently the only one, and we're the only one who probably makes the most sense to have one. I mean, we kind of have the natural fit, I think, personally. So, and with that, so that would be brief, and I tried. Are there other questions, things I didn't answer in the presentation that you read that you're wondering about, or any other details?
Only that you were thinking of getting it up and running in the spring semester of next year. Did I not read, though, that it would be easier if we did it in the spring than to start in the fall?
Our goal initially was we wanted to start this coming spring, but with the deadlines that we have,
okay,
between
okay.
coming here and the Department of Health and student government and getting, it's just not realistic.
Okay,
so
okay.
that's why we said if we built it in for fall, our goal is to start, if we were able to do this, to start fall with a small squad of, you know, 10 people, for example, to, you know, get rolling and have the interest. Right now we have 7 students who expressed interest to us that wish we were starting this yesterday. So a few are, I think, maybe actually harassing me to the point where I've said, you're going to have to cut me some slack until I can get through a few more presentations. So, yeah, not this spring. It's
okay.
not going to happen.
Okay.
So,
thank you.
Sure.
In reading through the, first of all, I thought it was wonderful. I'm glad you gave us that handout. I thought it was very thorough and good going on that. I really mean that. But I had a question about people who are in the program, and you're asking that they give 4 weeks. And I'm wondering if that's reasonable for emergency types of situations where they would leave in 2 weeks.
Yes.
And how that might affect your planning.
As far as them resigning from the squad?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to address your questions, Joe. The 4 weeks is trying to give us a little bit of lead time. If there's an emergency situation or there's something that, you know, notwithstanding, we'll deal with that as it comes up. I think it was just an idea that if they knew they were resigning just because they're graduating or, you know, that sort of thing, we thought 4 weeks would give us enough time to make sure we could adequately replace them. But it's not hard and fast. And the other question, one of the other questions you asked was the relationship between all the different leaders of the group. There's the group
right.
chief, and then there's the director, and then it's kind of a tight setup. If you look at
the
proposal, in the proposal, there's kind of a weird sideways diagram that shows the hierarchy there. It is a tight coordination, but there's a hierarchy in that they don't all have to be there on the scene.
Okay.
It's just a matter of them coordinating with each other. I didn't mention, again, because it was in the proposal, that our goal is to have 2 staff members who are advisors to the group, 1 course of university police and another staff member from the committee. And then the other folks mentioned, the director, the crew chiefs, are students who are on the squad. So they'll work with the advisor and coordinate. And I understand it's pretty commonly done that way. So I know nothing, I'm not an EMT. I won't pretend to know anything about being on an EMS squad, but I'm told that that's how it works. So thank you, I appreciate it.
Nice job.
I'll share with the committee. Yeah, listen, I take absolutely no credit. The committee has worked, particularly RJ, has worked incredibly hard on this, so I'll share that with them.
Well, you people did a superb job, and I think it's a great fit for our institution. Does anyone else have any questions or comments? Hearing none, do I have a motion to accept the proposal as presented?
So moved.
Roger and Joe?
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Thank you and your committee.
Thank you, and thank you for considering it.
Okay, is there any old business that anyone wants to resurrect? Hearing none, let's go on to the chairman's report, and I really don't have anything to report except that Ron asked me to convey his thanks to Dr. Zafran to keeping us informed during some of the crises that have taken place in the last few weeks, and we're very grateful for that communication, Doctor. President's report, then.
Okay, I'll be reasonably brief and then turn it over to various areas. I wanted to update the group on the status of the grants that we talked about last time. Last time we mentioned that we had submitted 7 new grants in addition to the one that we were still waiting to hear. Okay, so for a total of 8, and that the SUNY's process was now a two-stage process. I'm pleased to tell you that of the 8 proposals, all 8 made it through to the second stage. I don't know any other campus that can say that. Okay, and I hope we haven't used up all of our good karma, okay, on getting through there, but so far so good. Okay, and we're supposed to hear the results of these things in December, so not too long from now, but we've got a total of lots of money in there. Okay, the 2 biggest ones, one is like $18 million, and another one is like $7 million. Okay, and then there are several others that are more than a million in there. So it'll be very nice if we get them all, but that's not going to happen. Okay, I'm extremely happy to tell you about the new student opinion surveys that have come back. They do this statewide each year. These are how the students rate the various areas on the campuses. And SUNY Canton came in first, okay, in SUNY in 3 different areas, 2 of which were associated with our library services, and library access, basically. Okay, and then the 3rd one was tutoring services. Okay, so we were number 1 across SUNY in those 3 areas, and I can tell you, of course, the library were delighted at this result. And more generally, we were in the top 5 22 different areas, and the 22 areas included everything that you'd want them to. So ranging from quality of instruction, to quality of online, to availability of courses, to just basically, even parking, right? Quality of facilities, okay, and so forth. In terms of the bottom 5, how many things did SUNY Canton come in the bottom 5? Okay, and so I'd say those are really good results, and I'm glad that our students are pleased and showed that during the student opinion surveys. As you've probably already heard, we have successfully concluded our search for a new vice president for advancement and executive director for the Canton College Foundation, and that's Ann Sibley, okay, who has worked at this college before in the past and subsequently at Clarkson and at SLU, and so she's coming back home, and we're looking forward to working with her, and I would be extremely remiss if I didn't thank Keith for the wonderful job he's done in the interim period, so you have our strong thanks, Keith. And Anne will be joining us in the end of November. November 30th is the tentative date. I wanted to just keep you aware kind of 2 things, okay, that are in the category of, I'm not happy necessarily about them, but you should be aware of them, okay? One is about TAP, okay, which is the Tuition Assistance Program, and this is something that has kind of become an issue, not because of anything we've done, but because of Stony Brook, okay? And Stony Brook had a number of issues that the state auditors looked into, okay, of which TAP was one, okay, and they got hit with a big old fine, okay, and so that's caused every campus across SUNY to look at the way that it's awarding TAP funding, and this is a really arcane process, okay, and what it basically comes down to, and I'll say this as simply as I can say it, okay, if you're a full-time student, okay, you're required to take 12 hours of classes, okay, or more. And those 12 hours have got to be 12 hours required for your degree, okay? Which can include electives up to the number of electives that there's space for in your degree, okay? But something that's quite common is if a student is, say, a transfer student, one from college A to college B, often they'll have taken all of their core courses and often they'll have used up their electives at college A, and when they come to college B and they try to sign up for their courses for the next term, there may be, say, only 9 courses in their 9 credits in their major that they can take because of, you know, prerequisites and stuff like that. And they'll take another elective to round up the 12, okay, to make themselves full time, and that violates TAP. Okay, and so we're looking to see how much flexibility we've got because the rules are very arcane. There is such a thing as part-time TAP, which has its own set of rules. And a lot of this comes down to the fact that state ed is just micromanaging the way that financial aid is distributed in a way that we believe is probably not healthy. I've talked to the chancellor about this, okay, and the chancellor and the SUNY system are addressing this, right? We've given them some talking points. Other campuses have given them some talking points. They're trying to get the folks at state ed to change their interpretation and to, you know, allow reasonable use of electives and so forth. There are circumstances now where students can do it. Okay, so that's what I mean by the rules are arcane. It's not a you can or you can't. You can under certain circumstances. Okay, we're moving for better education of our advisors and our students so that they will be aware of exactly what the current status quo is so that they will be able to make reasonable advisement and take reasonable action. And we're working with SUNY to get the rules changed to open up the process, okay, a bit more. And so we just wanted to let you know this is an issue that we've got, you know, a couple of phone calls about, and this is not a SUNY campus issue. This is an across SUNY issue. Every single SUNY campus is facing this. Okay, and so, and you know, at least in consultation with others, the way we're proceeding is the way everybody else is proceeding. So.
And the light was shed on it as a result of an audit of Stony Brook. Is that what you're saying?
Stony Brook, yes, and Stony Brook had problems in 18 things or whatever it was, and this was one of them. Okay, and so I'm told this wasn't one of the bigger issues that Stony Brook had done that apparently crossed the auditor's lines on a bunch of stuff, which we need not get into now, but this was one of the smaller ones, but this at least was a heads up to all the other campuses to be careful.
And would it be fair to say that all the other campuses had probably been doing the same thing
yes.
without realizing without until it was brought up from that audit?
Without any question.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And, I mean, we've talked to several others, and it was, they're all in exactly the same boat. So, so I don't think it's a terribly serious boat, right? And so we're fine for this semester and for future semesters, better advising. Probably a little bit of internal change will, you know, mitigate most of the problem, and hopefully soon we will be able to get rid of the rest of it. So, anyway, so we just wanted you to know we're aware of it and we're on top of it. And then the other thing that you may have read about in the news that was kind of a hard blow to the region is Alcoa shutting down. Okay, or I shouldn't say shutting down, eliminating one of the hotlines and thus 500 jobs. And then on top of that, you have the power plant in Oswego and another 600 jobs. So, you know, despite all the economic development efforts in the North Country, which add jobs here and there and so forth, you think you're making progress, and then, you know, bango, right, a big number of jobs lost. Well, from where it looks at the moment, okay, it looks like the state may be stepping in Oswego or some combination of things, so I think likely nothing is going to happen there of any significance at the end of the day. Okay, it'll be different, but I don't think they're going to get the big job loss. Right, Alcoa, it remains to be seen. Right, obviously people are talking to them, trying to get them to change their minds. Okay, we are prepared to step in and, you know, do what's necessary in terms of helping folks up there to be retrained, to update their educations, to, you know, go into fields that have got jobs associated with them, because we're the obvious college to do that in the North Country. And so, you know, so nothing is determined at this point, okay, but we're prepared to do our part.
And the state's helping with their environmental issue, too.
Yeah. Oh, there are all kinds of issues here. I can tell you that when this was announced, like, every meeting in the North Country got canceled as people started to scramble in terms of how to deal with this in multiple ways. And this includes the economic development folks, this includes NYPA, this includes and basically everybody you can think of. Okay, and so we're in the middle of a lot of these discussions. I should mention, just because he's sitting here, okay, that SUNY Canton has got kind of an interesting distinction. Okay, we may be the first in New York to have a student flotilla, okay, as part of the Coast Guard Auxiliary, right? And our own Ryan Hart is the admiral of that flotilla. Okay, I saw him all dutied up in his uniform the other day, and I got to say, he looks very good in that Coast Guard uniform. I wish I had taken a picture. Mm-hmm. Okay, and in fact, what was really nice was that the Messina flotilla got a commendation for the fine work they had done, which is maybe the fine work Ryan has done, in terms of establishing this student auxiliary. And the nice thing about it, of course, for our students is it gives them the ability and the opportunity to learn all kinds of things about marine safety, about how to inspect ships. It's a really good thing for students in criminal justice, right, because of the you know, whole marine aspect of that. Okay, and we have, I think, 22 students, right, who are involved with that. So congratulations, Brian, and something well done. So that's a unique aspect of SUNY Canton. And we also had some meetings with one of the deans from the VAL Institute of Technology in South Africa. He was on our campus, and we're hoping to do we've done a memorandum of understanding with them, and we're hoping that we'll start to see some students coming over from there in the near future, so that's exciting. And finally, I'd like to mention that if I look at all tired today, it's because I was on a madcap rush down to Lincoln, Illinois. Okay, I left on Monday and came back Tuesday. Okay. Well, I actually left from Lincoln, Illinois on Monday. Okay, I left for Ottawa on Sunday, but that was another debacle. Okay, and in case any of you don't know this, okay, if you've got an enhanced New York license, that won't get you on a plane.
Right.
Okay, I found this out the hard way.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so I had to dash back from Ottawa to Canton, tell Jill, you know, be ready in 15 minutes when I come roaring through with a passport. I'll just pick it up, right, and then back to Ottawa.
So you had a passport, but you didn't take it?
I didn't take it. I didn't think I needed it.
Oh, no.
And so caught the next plane. Instead of the 6:30, I was on the 10:30. Okay, and got to Chicago at 11:30 and made it 7 minutes late for his inauguration at 2, okay, 220 miles away. So you know I was driving quickly. Okay, and so, but it was a wonderful inauguration, and Dave sends his regards to everybody. He misses everybody up here, and he is enjoying his new role as president. And so,
good for him.
I just wanted to let you all know. And with that, let me turn it over to the area reports. And let me start with from our union, because I know Brian has to leave early to go to class.
This is a contract with negotiations here, so there is a lot of talk about gathering input from different stakeholders on the campus, the students, the faculty, the staff, to see what areas of interest people would like to see addressed in the next contract. So more to follow as far as that goes. There really isn't too much news with the union. We've been meeting with the administration for our labor management meetings. We had a meeting that was generally geared towards labor management issues for the entire campus staff, and then we had another meeting for contingents. And we're working together with Z and Doug to ultimately just try to kind of deal with issues that impact a variety of different employees. And so far, things are going well. We really haven't had any arm wrestling matches or anything like that. It's been very collegial. And so I thank them for their cooperation. Thank you for meeting with us. And we look forward to more successful meetings in the future.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Academic affairs, Doug.
As I'm still getting oriented, it takes a little bit longer than you think. I started in July. I am completing my visiting of school meetings this afternoon. I'll be meeting with the Camino school this afternoon. Then we'll be moving forward with meeting department by department so I can get to know people more closely and hear about their ideas or their concerns. As I'm doing that, as I'm learning a lot about the college and where we want to go, I've been shaping a set of priorities, and I'll share with you it's an ongoing, evolving list of priorities. They're very much thinking and hearing and seeing things that need to be on my radar screen. And so one idea, there's basically five big ideas. One of them is about graduation rates for students, because that is the all and all of our work. Enrollments overall, drawing students in. Faculty development, so that we have very highly qualified faculty and continually developing faculty to serve our students. Academic assessment of student learning outcomes, because Middle States is putting that on our agenda, but also it keeps, again, our curriculum fresh. And I'm looking forward, the fifth area is philanthropy. I'm looking forward to how Anne will collaborate with or use academic affairs in that work. Different VPs of advancement have different ideas about how academic affairs and advancement work together. So it would be interesting to see what she, how she wants to use us. That's how we would how it worked in my previous institution, was that we would use, and I mean that in a benevolent way, we need you to come and join us in this conversation. In terms of enrollments, I'll just give an update on that area. In terms of applications, across the system, applications are phenomenally down. We're comparing this week with the same week last week. We're doing very well. Doing well in the current demographic enrollment of not enough kids graduating from high school. Doing well means holding steady. We're up 6.2% in applications from last year. And the colleges of technology are down 6.4% overall in applications from this time last year. So our admissions folks are doing very well, keeping us on track and hopefully moving forward.
It's good not to be Fredonia at this point. They're down 50%.
Yeah. There are some very very strong shortfalls. So we are doing very, very well. I think the only other technology that's doing better than us is Maritime, who is up 20% from last year, but they have a very specific student body and specific mission. So the other thing that the division has been doing with that I think fits in the area of enrollments is revising curricula, revising programs, and developing new programs. So since last time, I just want to share with you a couple of our new things. Our dual degree in nursing has moved forward to a program proposal at SUNY. And other programs that have moved forward to SUNY have included a new program. And so these are going to SUNY. They still have to be approved at SUNY and then go to State Ed. A hospitality and tourism management BBA, agribusiness BBA, emergency management, shifting from a BTech to a BS degree, physical therapy assistant, changing the curriculum. And just yesterday, went to SUNY a new program, bachelor's degree in technological communication, bachelor's degree, and a certificate in addiction treatment. So there are ongoing there's ongoing progress in moving through the approval cycle on some programs. There's several pages of those at various stages in the pipeline that you've heard of before, but also continuing new programs. And the idea for me in terms of enrollments is some of these programs aren't just providing updated curricula now or a wider variety of choice for our existing students, but that may attract new, additional, different students to SUNY Camp to drive enrollments in a continuing way. So I think that's a credit to
you, Doug. Any questions for Doug? Okay, administrative affairs, Sean.
So, from where I sit, and as we count our beans, enrollment was down this year a bit. We were able to offset some of those losses with additional tuition. We're in the fifth year of the five-year rational tuition plan. There is some discussion about will they continue that rational tuition increase, which basically means the trustees and the legislature agreed to $300 every single year for that five-year period of increases. What that allowed was for students to know what their tuition would be 4 years out, so they would know what it would cost at the end of the 4 years. Everybody felt that was a real big benefit. SUNY in the past had years where there would be no tuition increase, and then years where it would jump, you know, 10%. So feeling that that was unfair to the students, they decided to work on the rational plan. So for us, even though our enrollment for 15-16, our current year, is down a bit, we were able to offset some of that loss in revenue with the tuition increase. And we were also able to offset some of that with additional enrollment from out of state. And so because you get a higher tuition rate for an out-of-state student, just over $10,000 New York State tuition, $6,470 per year. Out-of-state associate's degrees, just over $10,000. And a bachelor's degree, $16,000. So it benefits us to bring in some out-of-state students as well. In addition, we don't have to supplement any TAP scholarships for those people. So we're able to offset a little bit of our revenue losses by the decrease in enrollment. So I don't know what will happen for 16-17. Hopefully our enrollment will be flat or increasing because we won't have that tuition increase to help offset our revenue losses. So I'm hopeful for that. We're also, you know, searching for some positions for the campus. We will be hiring cautiously based on you know, what we believe our projected enrollment will be. TAP gap this year, I know I keep you updated with the TAP gap, estimated at 1.5 million. So that's the difference between a fully TAP eligible student at $5,100, and each time our tuition goes up, that gap gets larger, and we pay that difference. So this year estimated at 1.5 million of additional scholarships. So kind of where we are, but I'm very comfortable with where we are. We did cut back some of our operating expenses. We held our PSR pretty flat. Temp services down a bit. And you know, we may have to dip into our reserves a little bit, but it's going to, I'm gonna wait and see how spring semester shakes out. But I think still we're in a good place. We're able to do the things that we need to go forward and advance.
And kind of two quick points on that. I saw at the beginning of the year our numbers in relationship to other SUNY campuses, and in part due to Sean's fine work, that we are considered to be either number one or number two in the system in terms of fiscal stability. Right? And so that's a very good place to be. And the other thing is to address some of those matters. SUNY has got a new thing which you'll be hearing about called Stand Up with SUNY.
I'll go into that more in my
update. Ah, okay. And you'll hear more about that from me more. Okay, and where they're trying to address the TAP gap and the non-full funding of costs at campuses. Keith, advancement.
Well, as Dr. Fran mentioned, MCLE will be starting on November 30th, and we're looking forward to that. Probably will be more than me. be quiet. Anne has been actively involved over the last month and a half, coming to executive cabinet meetings. She's met with myself and with Peggy Lamato several times to start getting herself acclimated. So when she arrives on the 30th, she'll have both the underground feet running. So we're looking forward to that. Having several children that are coming college age. I've spent much of the last year either visiting colleges or dropping my first freshman off, and I've been taking notes everywhere I can. And one of the things that I felt we were lacking was engaging our current students so that with the alumni office, so that they start thinking of themselves as alumni. And so when we come knocking in 10 or 15, 20 years, they'll be a lot more apt to support us. So one of the things that we've done in our division this year is we've done a lot of student outreach. So one of the things we did was pretty simple. We did hot dog days. We set up in front of each of the respective dorms one Thursday afternoon, cooked some hot dogs for the students, gave them a bag of chips, a bottle of water, and a little slip of paper that said, "We're the alumni in the foundation office. This is what we do. When you get an emergency loan, it's coming from us. It's coming from our support of our board. When you get a scholarship, a lot of times it's coming from us. And this is why we're here, and this is what we can do for you." We don't want to leave commuter students out, so we set off at July 1 Thursday morning, and then wisely moved to the parking lot so we can get run over the following week, and handed out hot chocolate and donuts to people coming onto campus. One of our alumni ran Horse Feather Haunts, which was a haunted corn maze in Potsdam this past year, so we teamed with the Student Government Association to take a group of students. I think we ended up with about 40 or 45 students that went over one Friday evening. So we sponsored that. And we have one last event scheduled for this semester, and that's we're going to do a s'mores event out on the plaza during finals week. About 8 o'clock in front of the library, we're going to set up a little bonfire, and we're going to cook some s'mores for the students. So we're really just trying to do some simple things that hopefully are having a large impact on what we're hearing. Are having a large impact on the students, so I think that's a good thing for us. One of the other things that we've done more of in the last 6 months, we've created some giving societies. We have a Pace and Martin Society, which recognizes those who have made an estate or a planned gift to the college, and we had an induction ceremony in August at the Alumni House for both our Pace and Martin Society and the Grass River Leadership. Grass River Leadership would be anybody who has given $50,000 in their lifetime to the college, to the foundation. So we inducted about 35 members at the Alumni House in August, and we're actually planning another event for Grass River Leadership for local businesses that'll be in early December. And we have probably another 30 businesses that will be inducting into the Honor Society. We also created something called the 1906 Societies to recognize those who give at least $1,906 to the college on an annual basis. So we're hopeful that this will kind of spur some giving of our friends and supporters. We're trying to make this a little bit of a prestigious event. We get a nice pin. Hopefully we'll do other events where you'll get the previous members back together along with inducting new members. So we have a lot of hope for that. And another event that we did this year was a Deans and Department Chair event. Again, that was at the Alumni House. I just felt that there was some disconnect between our office and some of the other departments on campus. So we had a nice little event one Friday night right after midterm exams or midterm grades were due. Hit the deans and department chairs over to the Alumni House, had some cocktails and some hors d'oeuvres, and I was amazed at the number of people who walked in, who have probably worked on this campus together for 10 years, and were introducing themselves because they never really had need or cause. Somebody's over in Neveldine, somebody else is over in MacArthur Hall, and they've never really crossed paths other than seeing each other maybe at a faculty assembly meeting. So I think Doug would agree we had people leaving that were somewhere from the business department and engineering, and they were already working on things that they could collaborate together on. So it's great to see, and they're asking when we're going to do that again. So I think we'll move forward with that. And then the final thing I have is our after Canton. I won't steal Travis's thunder. should be hitting the mail this afternoon. And I think it's a great publication, and a big thank you to the PR department for their help in getting that out. We got it out pretty much on schedule this year.
from what we hope to do, and I think we have a really nice product, so a big thank you to PR. And then finally, I just want to thank the senior leadership and the foundation board for instilling their trust in me over the last 6 months in my role as the acting VP, and thank you to everybody for their support of me.
Thank you, Keith. Faculty Senate update from Karen?
Faculty Senate met in late October. Report on some actions our executive committee took on behalf of the Senate, and then some presentations and resolutions. The Faculty Senate Executive Committee acted on three different items for the Senate. One had to do with applied learning. There's a big push from SUNY with applied learning, and there's been some concerns on campus that faculty haven't been involved in some of that applied learning. So that's just sort of a push out there to say, if we're going to have applied learning, faculty should be engaged in it, even if it's not credit bearing. The SUNY Student Assembly Executive Committee passed a resolution to limit unpaid internships as part of programs, and they were seeking endorsement from the Faculty Senate. The Faculty Senate Executive Committee decided not to endorse that because they thought if you went to all paid internships, the chances of enough students getting an internship that were paid would be reduced. And even the unpaid ones bring valuable experience to students, so they didn't endorse that. They also looked at the SUNY Task Force on Social Responsibility has put forth some recommendations to the Board of Trustees to act upon. And in one of the recommendations, the Senate thought it sort of implied that they were giving sort of a mandate to campuses to develop a course or a social responsibility, how they could. Wording implies uniform curriculum in which students would address social media responsibility, which appeared to the Senate as intrusion into faculty control of curriculum matters. They weren't so opposed to the idea of curriculum change, but they didn't think it should come as a mandate from the Board of Trustees. Presentations at the Senate, Chancellor Zimfer presented on causes and effect of funding. She kind of gave a historical perspective of SUNY tried to do this, which didn't quite work, but in the end it got us this. So she went through that. We met with Vice Chancellor Carlos Medina to talk about the SUNY diversity initiatives. And Provost Cartwright talked about SUNY Excels. He focused in on retention, graduation, and increased credentialing. And it was very interesting to watch his approach because it's the first time I've seen SUNY or someone at that level come out with, this is the plan. I mean, he's an engineer. He had inputs, he had outputs, he had benchmarks for all along, and if we don't hit this benchmark, we need to readjust here. It was an engineer. The Faculty Senate passed the following resolutions. They passed one on academic freedom, and this one is asking each campus to look at their own campus policies and the language they use in their documents in terms of addressing that our academic freedom policies are consistent with best practices. As far as I know, we don't have...
No, but we have a meeting next week. Yeah. So again, Dr. Zafran said it's all
fun. As far as I know, we haven't had big problems on this campus with academic freedom, so... We also passed a resolution requesting that the University United Professors and SUNY work out a paid family medical leave policy. Right now there isn't one across the campus, and since UUP is in the process of negotiating a new contract, they thought it was a good idea to put forth an idea that maybe that should be in the contract. So there's a university-wide family medical leave policy that would entail some paid leave. And they also made a request of the Board of Trustees to change the Board of Trustees policies. The Vice President for the University Faculty Senate, so that they, the Faculty Senate, could change their bylaws. And right now, if someone's elected as the Vice President of the Faculty Senate, that person holds that office plus they hold their Senate office on their own campus. And that seems a conflict of interest, because are you working on behalf of the entire body, or are you representing your campus? So they thought separating the two. So if someone's elected vice president, that's the office you serve, and your campus will then elect a new senator. And that's it for the Senate.
And Liz, I was told you didn't have a report, but that doesn't go to judge that you're late. Would you like to say something at this time?
Again, in regards to what Karen had mentioned, back in May, our campus supported a resolution on the Family Medical Leave Act, which was sent to SUNY, so then SUNY Faculty Senate could support that. And the academic freedom policy that was passed as the resolution was to ask each faculty governance section to have an academic freedom statement within their bylaws that would speak to faculty that don't have tenure that may not want to stand up in support or against something coming forward. So to have a two or three sentences protecting that. So that's what we're going to discuss next week about potentially adding that in. And the other thing with faculty governance, we're kind of looking at our membership right now just to define it a little bit better so we can get more participation on campus in our governance process. And Doug has been working on charging some of our, we have 8 governance committees, and he's been working slowly on charging each one with various issues. So we'll be looking at the retention committee having a report on what we can do across the board to retain our students a little bit better every semester, and we can predict whether or not they're going to have issues that semester in a class to try to jump on that really early. We've also had a charge to our continuing appointment appeals committee to look at some of our processes for when a person does have an appeal on a promotion or their continuing appointment decision, just kind of streamline that process a little bit easier. And I think we have a charge coming up perhaps to the retention committee again for another topic, just in general looking at retention.
Right, we were specifically looking at the intervention strategy. If a student is rated as not engaged by their faculty at week 3, ask them to design some recommendations and a policy about how the campus intervenes to support that student so that they do the semester well and return the next year, the next semester. Retention is one of my important issues in terms of completion, and so once this semester and that task is done, I will be coming back to ask yet more questions, because it is so important. If a student doesn't come back the subsequent semester, we are not able to support them towards completion and graduation. So that's an important piece of our work.
It does, right? Percentage of loss. Is there any numbers, I guess? What would that be? Give me some idea.
I can give you an exact idea. The typical number that's used nationally is you define a student by who they are when they start their freshman year. So we typically look at a first-time, full-time freshman in a bachelor's program. We obviously, because people don't realize that colleges like us exist with both associates and bachelor's degrees. So which number should we use? Our overall number had last year was 67%, and unfortunately this year dropped to 63%. We have SUNY Excel's goals that are about moving that number significantly higher, because we very much want to. And the good, interesting thing is that our retention rate for bachelor's degree students is, correct me if I'm 83%, and it's lower for associate's degree students who may come in with less academic preparation, 72%. Don't hold me to those numbers, but the 67, 63, and the 83%, I am confident in. But we have very strong goals, and so we have to develop strategies, which we're going to charge the committee with, saying, help us find out what the best practices are, so that when the student comes here during their freshman year, we can support them to be retained and come back the next year. And then, interestingly, of the students we lose before graduation, we lose half of them in year 1 to year 2. The other half that we lose across the subsequent years. So we want to look at both of those, the folks who have difficulty freshman year, as well as whether their issues, or perhaps if there's issues in terms of how we support them, or sometimes it'd be the bottleneck or difficult courses, we need to kind of study where and why and how people leave so that we can do what we can to help them stay and graduate.
Is this a trend across?
This is like one of the big numbers that everyone looks at.
Not as bad as most of
it. Well, we're not where we'd like to be, but we are improving.
Yeah.
We're determined to continuously improve. And in fact, one of the white papers that we submitted to SUNY is to allow us to apply technology to this issue through an outfit called Full Measure, okay, which we're excited about. And what SUNY actually likes, they asked us to submit that one. And in fact, pretty much every white paper that we submitted in one way or another addresses retention and graduation and supporting our students. Because that's what we're all about.
Years ago when I taught here, there were some surveys done by faculty and faculty assembly, et cetera. And at that time, it pointed out that the majority of the students who left, it had to do with financial issues. I would suspect that if we had a real pinpointed survey again, that that issue still remains. Am I correct?
What a student leaves in theory, they formally tell us that they're withdrawing and they do an exit survey. Unfortunately, some students leave by not coming back, and we don't have the, you know, we don't have the opportunity to do that. But in all ways that we can figure out why a student leaves, some may be academic and would have their previous semester records.
Mm-hmm.
Some could be financial. I know often the amount of unmet financial need can be the tipping point. And that is actually easy to study in terms of when it was, where that number rests in terms of whether we want to target some specific scholarships. And my thinking is there are issues that we can support students, we can try and do. Some things are not changeable,
right?
Like things that happen at home, but can we help the student to adapt to those things that aren't changeable? And some things are changeable, like academic preparation and remediation, and those are things that perhaps we can
intervene.
So we need to study them and then with faculty design some interventions to support students. That's the most important thing we can do.
I have a question. The ones that convert from associates to bachelors, how are you finding that the retention, that group?
Interesting thing is, I haven't looked at that number because, oddly, you are who you are on the day you start. So if you start as an associate's degree student, that's who you are. And if you start as a bachelor's degree student on day one, that's who you are. We can ask our IR person to do the subsequent study of progression from associates to bachelor's and so forth. Or we just look at them as a whole. But yeah, there's a lot of digging of, well, what if we ask it this way? Sometimes that answers a question and tells us how we can respond.
And SUNY is changing there. I mean, SUNY was using the same model that pretty much everybody uses nationally, which is called the IPEDS model. Okay, and just as Doug said, IPEDS, the way you were on the day you registered, that's your status forevermore. And so if a student comes in, for example, and comes in as a four-year student and graduates with a two-year degree, right, that counts as a failure, okay, for the college. If a student transfers in, right, from, say, Potsdam to here, and then graduates with a four-year degree, that counts as a failure for Potsdam, and it counts as nothing for us. Because they didn't start here all, okay? And so all of this is problematic for any real college, as opposed to, you know, the very elite ones where people come in, stay, and graduate. Okay, and so SUNY is changing the way it's doing this and to take into account the various real things that students actually do and to be able to count them in terms of their success rate, which is a very good thing. Anything else on the subject? Retention is, you know, everybody's favorite subject, okay, on campuses. Just as you asked, Joe, every campus is looking at this in ways of trying to optimize it. We instituted, as you'll remember, the early warning engagement grades. That works very well for us in terms of identifying the students who have a need. We heard that Doug saying we're following up now on how to better engage them. We're looking at lots of different metrics, and this Full Measure will allow us to take a 360-degree view around every student so that everyone on campus can be involved in
you know, doing the support and the catch, which I think will be a fine thing. All right, Travis, public relations.
Sure. As Keith mentioned, After Ken should be hitting your mailbox today or tomorrow. The cover story is SUNY Ken joining the NCAA. It also features some stories about Dave Gerlach and his mission for joining Lincoln College. Kevin Fear is featured and a few other alumni, Tom Woodside and his foundation scholarship. So if you're really dying to read it tonight, and I know you all are, right, there is an online version available via the alumni webpage, so if you want to check it out tonight, you can do that. Moving on to some accolades. GreatValueColleges.net ranked us number 9 on their colleges for animal lovers, thanks to our pet-friendly wing and some therapy dogs we have brought to campus for a stress-free week. The next batch here is military-friendly, so we were a military-friendly school. We were also a top school by Military Advanced Education in Transition magazine, and a Military Times Best for Vets magazine. We're ranked number 12th in that category. So in honor of Veterans Day, tomorrow we'll be putting out a press release celebrating these 3 accolades. We are also featured in STEM Jobs, and we are a STEM Jobs 2015 Industry Award winner, which means we offer the best training and preparation for graduate center STEM fields. So that's a big honor for us. And then probably one of our biggest news stories, probably of the semester, maybe even of the year, one of our students, Braden White, ventured down to Washington, D.C., and met with President Obama as part of the 7th Annual Tribal Nations Conference. So if you're really interested in checking that out, I think it's on the White House website as an archive. He got to ask a few questions of President Obama and you know, lots of photo opportunities. And as part of his he's from the Akwesasne Nation, so he's been a very big proponent of bracing relationships between the college and the Akwesasne Nation. And he just met with our artwork committee on Friday and asked us to fly the Akwesasne flag on campus, which to my knowledge has never happened before. So he's definitely bridging those two nations, and hopefully we can benefit and get some additional students from the Akwesasne Nation. And as a side note, just to add to his fantastic week, he flew out of Burlington, Vermont, and Bernie Sanders just happened to be on the plane with him as well. So not a bad week for the young gentleman. So with that, that concludes my report. So.
Is there anything else that you're doing, say, on a daily basis?
Yes, the daily update. Some of these accolades you may have already known about if you were subscribing to the daily update and reading it. We continue to move forward with the daily update, and that features all of our campus events, previous stories that you may have missed, our photo of the day, video of the day,
soup of the day,
and we've actually extended that on, so now there's a soup of the week, so you can plan ahead.
Plan
your soup consumption, yes.
So it's great, and you know, we hope that you folks will read it as well, right? Because lots of good material in there. And I should mention our Akwesasne student has come to see me a couple of times. He is working closely with Bill Jones on a couple of things, not least of which is writing a proposal to SUNY, which they will fund, to increase our support for Native American students. And we're about to meet, in fact, with the Nation's Council on this to see if we can do some big things together.
Yes.
And so this is an initiative that we're taking very seriously. Courtney, Student Affairs.
How do I follow after President Obama and soon to be President on campus? I follow up with great news. So on the athletics front, so many amazing things happening right now. We just got finished hosting the USCAA volleyball tournament for the 4th year in a row. Unfortunately, our young ladies were out on Friday night, but still a successful tournament all around. We lost one of our best senior players to an MCL injury the night before the tournament began. So you can imagine in her senior year the devastation that she felt. But the team pulled through and continued to play very well. We also have two USCAA All-Americans in women's soccer. We have four men's soccer players on the USCAA All-American team, which is great. And our big news is we had our first ever USCAA national champion in cross country, Anya McMorrow, our student from Scotland, who has continued to, or Ireland. Anyway, she's continued. She's a freshman who had never run cross country before. Found us online, came here, joined the team, and has just been a phenomenal runner. I mean, she just blows everybody out of the water. So they had a great time in Florida for the national championships and came back on Sunday night.
She got first place.
Our first ever national champion. Women's hockey, men's hockey, men's basketball, women's basketball have started, so it's winter sports time, and are all going well so far. In other news, we had our health fair, which was very successful. We had 405 student contacts through that, which is great. We are hosting this weekend the North Country RA Conference for the four colleges, which is a nice feather on the cap, and we have a nice panel of some staff members from all four institutions on Sunday speaking to our RAs as our future leaders. We had our first student dance in 2 years. I know this doesn't sound like a big deal. 2 years ago in November, we made the decision to not have dances on campus. They were creating an environment for some significant behavioral issues. After meeting with some charming young men from the basketball team who talked me into letting them give it a try, we did. They had a successful event off campus that went really well, and so I said, okay, well, let's see how it goes. And we held it on Halloween night of all times, after student activities got done with their Halloween lock-in event, which was successful, and I'm proud to report the dance went incredibly well, and we'll look forward with a few more of those in the future. I did want to thank the Advancement Alumni Office for all the student initiatives that they've done. That's been phenomenal to have that support. And we continue to be a resource for people with social media issues. Plattsburgh reached out last week with a social media problem on Yik Yak. So our one incident from a year ago continues to make us apparently the area experts on this topic. I don't know how I feel about being an area expert on it. We certainly have our own social media challenges with all the new things that pop up on a daily basis, but always glad to help out colleagues. And Liz and I are attending, I think, the first ever fostering relationships between academic affairs and student affairs conference at the end of the week, which is kind of a neat initiative that SUNY and the Faculty Senate, I believe, are putting on. So good things going on. Thank you.
And on that Yik Yak front, you may have seen nationally it's still going strong with people bringing to the federal government trying to ban it on campuses because it's a platform that they argue promotes racism and sexism and assaults and so forth. And, of course, on the other hand, you've got the freedom of speech issue. So it's still very controversial, and we should be making a report from the Chancellor's Task Force on Social Media Responsibility at the January meeting, I believe it will be, of the Board of Regents. Any questions for Courtney? Okay, Student Government Association update, Kiana.
Hi, guys. The first update is a Moral Rock proposal. We're moving forward with basically creating a sanctuary on campus where students, faculty members, families, or the community can come and mourn and reflect on passing students, family members, and so on and so forth. And it's going to be, do you guys know where the Peace Garden is located on campus? It's on the left of French, I believe. And it's just an area where it's really quiet and it's really beautiful. And you can see the whole campus from that that area. And we're going to place a rock, and it's going to basically say that it's for all students. It's going to be a rock for everyone. And we're going to do a ribbon ceremony, but we don't know when yet. So I will invite you guys when that happens and so on and so forth. So that's just a really big thing that we're all really proud of and that we know a lot of students will just be really grateful for. Another thing is we're trying to find a pitch or create a video where basically we
can sell the idea of everyone is welcome here at SUNY Canton, because we know that it's a lot of diversity issues that go on campus, and people don't feel welcome. We want the community to know that, you know, Canton is a place where, you know, everyone is welcome, and that the students can feel safe, and everyone is different in Canton. So that's what I'm working towards right now, and we're just trying to find different students and their outlook on things. So that will be happening very soon. We're still focusing on branding ourselves and leaving an impact on SUNY Canton outside of the Memorial Rock and the branding ourselves. So we're just thinking of different ideas of what to bring to campus that me as a senior, like, it'll be just years to continue and so forth. And we also like to thank the alumni office for reaching out to the students that do go here, because it was funny thing, yesterday a student was like, I can't wait to graduate so that I can give money back. And we was like, you give the money back? But she's excited. But she was excited to the fact, because she's like, she realizes what alumni does for the students on campus. So it was really, it was cool to see someone else just randomly say that while I was just enjoying the event. And this weekend, we will be attending SUNY SA to collaborate with the other SUNY schools so that we can have their perspective on things. And we usually merge directly with the technology schools, but I guess this weekend I'm going to focus on doing the other schools so I can know, just besides technology schools, what can we do as a SUNY school to enhance. So that's just the key points of what student government is working on. We're just trying to brand ourselves, brand Canton, and just make it a happy place for everyone.
Well, in fact, Canada mentioned one of the biggest things that student government is working on, which is trying to support some national legislation in terms of financial aid,
yes.
Right? Because there's been a move about the Perkins loans, right? And our student government is trying to bring them back.
Yes, we actually wrote a letter to several senators of New York, and we basically told them I'll just distress about the Perkins loan and how it affects us as students and every student, all the student body, and just nationwide and in New York. And we actually heard back from a few offices, and they're going to basically use what we said in our letter to give to the state legislators and the government, the federal government. So that was kind of cool that they're going to use what we wrote and take into consideration. So that's what we're working on, the Perkins loan. But as of now, it's a rough road, but we're going to still do whatever we can to promote the Perkins loan and any other federal loan for financial aid, because that is a big thing with retention, because a lot of students, I personally know, don't come back to school because of financial reasons.
And I'd be remiss in not mentioning that between our student affairs office and our student government area, we've had some fabulous events on campus. Homecoming was a great success, lots of great events, well attended. But I attended a big old bunch of them and thoroughly enjoyed myself, right? Not to mention diverse discussions events on our campus, not to mention Canton's Got Talent, which it definitely has, and there's a big turnout for that, okay? And lots of great athletic events, such as you've heard. And so it's been a really good semester, I think, in terms of activities for students being well attended. The Living Writers Series has drawn strong attendance. We've got a new series on leadership, right? Where we bring in leaders from business and from other nations' consulates and so forth. Those have gotten very good attendances as well. We get the Consul General from New York City from South Korea on our campus a few weeks ago, and there were like 85 students and faculty there, right? Which was a very big turnout. He was delighted. He's now hooked us up with two colleges in Korea that he thinks would be good partners for us in terms of exchange and so on. And so you never know where these things are going
to
move.
And another FYI, student government will be hosting a diverse discussion on November 17th, so if that's something you guys are interested in coming on to and sharing your opinion on. The topic is double standards, because there's double standards with men and female, men and women, with women and women, female and female, just relationships in general. So, yeah.
No. That's been a very great term. Okay, and finally, Lenore, University Relations.
Sure, so I'll start with Government Relations. They are starting a big push. Stand with SUNY is the kind of big logo and saying this year for the push with the legislature. And The two main pushes that they're focusing on is, again, extending the rational tuition for a maximum of $300 a year with the option to be less than $300. So it, they're kind of saying, you know, it puts a cap on how much we can raise tuition, but it in fact leaves it up to the SUNY trustees rather than the legislature to determine what the tuition will be. And it does make planning for college expenses much easier, as Sean says, for students. They're not sure whether that's going to go through again, but certainly they're pushing that really, really hard. It's one of the main asks for the legislature in the upcoming budget negotiations. The second big push is on the investment fund. This past year, the legislature provided $18 million to SUNY to put towards projects across the system, and SUNY made it a competitive process. That's where the white papers and the grant proposals came in. They added it to the SUNY 2020, $55 million, and a couple of other pots of money to put them all together. They're going to push for a significant increase in that, touting the great projects that have come through it already, which is why they want to announce the projects by December, so that we can go in to the legislature in January and say, look what we've done with that $18 million. Imagine what we could do with 50, right? And so those are the two big pushes. They also will be discussing closing that TAP gap that Sean referred to and funding some of the negotiated salary increases. The feeling that I got from the SUNY government relations folks is that those are not sexy enough for the legislature to fund, so they will be tangentially kind of mentioned but not pushed as hard as the rational tuition increase and the investment fund. So in turn, I think a lot of campuses who are adversely affected by the TAP gap and by the lack of funding for those negotiated increases will be pushing that as a college in our own materials and in our own meetings. So even if SUNY isn't pushing that hard, we'll be pushing it on our end, because that's a really important point for funding and for moving ahead. They are asking that we really push with our own college council, that you write letters to your legislators, that you write letters to the editor. We're very happy to help with that, provide template letters that you can personalize in any way that you see fit. But we will be asking for your involvement. The more the legislators hear from people that are related in any way to the college, the better chance we have of getting funding. So I'll be working on some of those letters to send a couple of templates for letters to the editor and letters to the legislatures that you can then personalize. Let me know if you have any additional points you'd like to add to those. I'm always happy for suggestions for that. Moving on to kind of looking externally from the college, the St. Lawrence International Film Festival, we were one of the major sponsors for that event, and it turned out really, really well. It was very successful with filmmakers from around the country and around the world, along with actors and along with visitors. Town was hopping that week, and our name was everywhere in those promotional materials on the website, mentioned at many of the events. So I think that was a really positive way to promote our campus in the community in New York and in Ontario as well. So I think that was great. We had significant campus involvement. We sponsored the block party, which took place at Tawny because of weather. But I think several hundred people came in and out of that venue as the block party went on. Two students played some music for that, along with two staff and faculty members. The CA presented some pretty incredible barbecue, some pretty incredible food that people really enjoyed. There was a movie showing on campus. Our videographer from PR was very heavily involved in some of their promotional materials. We had a student submit a short film to the student competition. And the staff mobilization to get the word out and to get students there, to get faculty and staff there, was really phenomenal. I can say honestly that even Dan Aykroyd knows where and what SUNY Canton is now as a part of this. So it was a really great event, and as kind of a founding sponsor, we were very supportive of that initiative from the beginning, thanks to the forward thinking of Dr. Zafran and of Mike Perry from CA, and of Sean Miller as well. We kind of get the in for next year. We've already booked some significant space on campus where we can hold more events on our campus, movie showings, forums, other things like that. And we will be able to sponsor that again and be a significant part of something that I think I'm fairly certain will grow in the years to come. So I appreciate the forward thinking of many of our administrators and acknowledging that this could be a really positive thing for the college. As far as Startup New York, I participated in a seminar at the Bridge and Port Authority on Canadian businesses moving to the United States and the benefits that Startup New York could confer on those companies. There's been at least two companies with fairly serious interest in that that have followed up with me. So I think that was really positive. One is a honey company, which I think is kind of cool. They make products out of particularly, I'm trying to think, I think it's, there's a maybe it's Nigeria. There's a place in Africa that has particularly very good honey, I guess. I didn't know about this. And they use that honey and market various products. They're interested in having a base of operations in the U.S. Another company as well. And next week I'll be meeting with representatives of the new owners of the zinc mine here in the area and talking about how perhaps Startup New York could benefit that company as well and how our students could be involved with that. So,
St. Charles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're looking to begin operations and they're looking to see how Startup New York can help them in starting that mine up again. So at least a small influx of jobs in the face of Alcoa drastically reducing their operations is a really good thing, and I think it's great for our campus to also be involved with that. So we'll be working with the IDA and with that company on that. I'm happy to answer any questions.
And with regard to Lenore's comments, I want to raise a couple of things. One is with regard to the standard SUNY issue. It would be very much in our campus's preference to have full funding for the raises and so forth and for the TAP gap as opposed to the rational tuition if we have to choose one or the other. Okay, and hopefully we'll get both. Okay, if the stars align with the legislature. Okay, because the former two are far more, more money on this campus, and it's money that our students wouldn't have to pay,
right. Okay,
which would be a good thing. Lenore is way too modest in talking about a number of things from her area that she was involved in. So it wasn't just two staff members also playing at the tawny party. Yeah, she was one of them. Okay, as part of the group Uprooted, right? And they played beautifully. And even my mother danced to it.
And that picture made the Watertown Daily Times.
That's right. And she didn't mention her own role in the Young Women's Leadership Group.
Yes.
Where she gave a workshop very recently, which I'm told by SLU's president's wife went very well. See, they didn't invite me because I couldn't pass the physical this organization. But I'm told that things went very, very positively.
And we had, I think, 20-something students from our campus that went to this leadership institute.
Yeah, but I hear they were great.
Kiana was there. There were some great workshops, great community facilitators, good connections, I think, made between students and leaders in the community and at the four colleges.
Yeah, I was at an event just before I left for Illinois, literally just before I left, the hour before I left, and I ran into Mrs. Fox, and I ran into Mrs. Collins, and again, they were just both talking about how great our students are, okay, which of course I love hearing. And the last thing that Lenore didn't mention is how SUNY Canton is taking over the world, okay, one step at a time, starting with the village and town boards. And so a certain Sean Sean, okay, has now been elected to the village board. Also gave a talk on James Bond and Empire during the St. Lawrence Film Festival, and our own Rosemary Phillips is on the town
board. The town board.
The town board.
And she's faculty in legal studies.
Yes. And so we're today, Canton, tomorrow, the world. Okay, and the last thing that I just wanted to mention, okay, is that I was at the ACT conference, okay, in Saratoga a couple of weeks ago, and that's the conference that's about trustees and
about college councils and, you know, working together with the colleges. And I have to say I very much enjoyed being there. It was interesting meeting a number of folks. And one of the issues that came up there, okay, which I thought was worth bringing up here, is does our college council feel well informed? Okay, because apparently on some campuses they don't have meetings like this, or they're fairly perfunctory or whatever. Okay, and you know, that's become an issue. And I just wanted to make sure that we were doing everything we can to be communicative with our college council, that you felt that you knew what was going on, you know, kind of not just the good stuff, but all the stuff. And you know, to make sure that you had all signed up to get the campus emails now, and you should be all getting everything we sent to, you know, the faculty student list, and all the New York alerts and all that. Plus, of course, I know you're all loyal readers of the Weekly Lab.
That's what I was going to say.
And so we just want to make sure that, you know, everybody is happy with the way that communication is going.
I know that I receive more information now than I ever thought possible. I mean, I hear about, and then I read the Blab and I find out how Dr. We know more about the people here than I think you know than you do. And it's pretty wonderful, I think. Congratulations on all the achievements you've had. And I think it's wonderful your husband's involved as well. And I think you've got a point there with Dr. Sabran about first Canton in the world.
Well, it's creeped to Potsdam.
Yeah, the Potsdam too. Well, yeah, you're on the point.
I'm your supervisor.
Yeah, that's right. The thing is, we're not just informed, we're being shown ways that we can act like writing letters to legislatures and legislative editors. So you are actually empowering us to do more for the campus.
Great.
So that I appreciate you.
And that's really important because, you know, when we talk, you know, even as a president of a college, saying, no, of course he's going to want more money, right, for the campus. And so it's kind of, you know, expected. But when they hear from people in industry, when they hear from people who are civic leaders such as yourselves, right, and that makes a very big difference.
I'd like to add to what Lenore was saying. The Dr. Fox, she is the wife of the president of St. Lawrence, started this Young Women's Leadership Conference over a year ago. And several of us have been involved in that from the beginning. And what I'd like to say is one of the advantages of being aged like myself is that you can watch the difference in climate and in perception. There were many things that happened 20 and 30 years ago where Canton College was not included. I'm not going to go into that or what the reasons were, but that's not the case now. Lenore was one of the speakers on the panelists, but they also had all the tables for these students. They were called mentor tables, where we discussed with these young ladies, most of whom were juniors and seniors, ready to go out into the professional world, things like how do you negotiate your first salary, what's the right kind of apparel, you know, that kind of thing. And the students just wandered at any table that looked friendly, so you had at the same table students from Clarkson, St. Lawrence, Canton College, and Potsdam, and the mentor could be from anywhere. At my table, there were kids from every one of the schools. And it was nice to hear their interaction and how surprised they were when our people were speaking up. And I just think that you ought to know that Mo, what's her name? Mayako?
Maureen.
She was one of the people. I was there. Lenore was there. Was there anybody else from Canton College? For a mentor,
you,
a spieler.
Priscilla.
Priscilla
yeah. Was there as well. She's been very involved. She was one of the main organizers.
Yes,
of the
yes.
Priscilla,
so we were very much involved in that. And I'm thinking that locally, that's good. It's good not only for the perception, but the reality of what we have become. And I really appreciated all you did for that conference. And I enjoyed it. I think it's something that's evolved. It's getting more and more. There were almost 200 young people there.
And that's why the work that our folks in PR does is so important. Okay, because, you know, let's face it, the North Country is kind of a quiet place. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, somebody gets stung by a bee that's on the, you know, the front page of the newspaper, right? And, you know, that's not always good. Okay, and we had a couple of incidents on our campus where our students did not act in the best possible light. But, you know, we were able to get response out, you know, saying, hey, we're talking about 0.1%. Right, of the students, let's focus on the 99.9% who are doing amazing things, right? And similarly, we just had a couple of articles about our Anglo-Sosby student meeting with the president, and of course our athletic students doing remarkable things, and, you know, so many others. And so that's why it's, you know, important to get the news about what SUNY Camp is all about out there, because especially at times like this, you know, with the Alcoa thing happening and so on, it's something that's, you know, a kind of a bright spot in a dark cloud, okay, is that everybody recognizes the critical role that SUNY Camp is going to play in A, mitigating this, and B, setting up plans for the future for economic growth and development in this county.
It's important to get it out now.
Yeah, and it's absolutely important, but, you know, we're right in there. Yeah. As main players, and I don't know that this would have been the case some years in the past.
Right.
And so I think that's really a good point. And with that, Madam Chairman, we conclude our report.
Thank you very much, sir. Is there any new business that anyone wants to bring up? If not, a member of the council was asked that we go into executive session. So I would like a motion to go into executive session.
So
move. Cloanne and
second.
Roger, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Done.
Would you like me to stay for this one?
Yes.
Tell them I'll be open Wednesday, Thursday.
Good one.